Well, we'd like to welcome you back to the Saturn-Earth Connection with Michael in Maui, and our website is helloearth.info, and this is Hour 70, and today is the 23rd of December, and even though I say it's the Saturn-Earth Connection, well, it's the connection with the luminous sphere near Saturn that Michael and Riley have been out to, possibly some many, many other people. Well, we have Michael on the line. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Curtis, and hello to everyone.
Hello. Well, good to have you back, and it's here we are on the 23rd of December, very close to Christmas Day. And I mentioned to Michael that I want to talk about the star in the east a little later. But I first wanted to mention, before we get started, that Apollo 8 astronauts circled the moon. Maybe they circled it like 10 times, and that was 40 years ago. And that was Frank Borman, Jim Lovell, and William Anders, and we've never been back to the moon since. And there's a reason why we haven't been back to the moon. And my example is Edmund Hillary. He climbed Mount Everest in 1953, and since then, 1,400 climbers have been to the summit. But we've never stepped foot on the moon since we went there so long ago. So there's a reason why we don't go back to the moon. I guess it's the other side of the moon. Did you see the other side of the moon, Michael?
Well, you couldn't really see. Yeah, I did see it. Yeah.
Very quickly.
It's more, you know, like in this, it's hard to make out.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So they said they had some operation there, too.
Oh, they told you there? And what did they say?
Just that we have some things going on here, too. Just a passing comment. And you kind of laughed at that pun, you know, no pun intended, you know, it's a passing comment.
Yeah, did they say that, oh, yeah, we saw you guys there and we just kicked you out, or did they say anything?
No.
Could you ask them to find out what they say about the other side of the moon?
Who?
Tan.
Oh. what is their purpose there?
Yes, what is their purpose on the moon? What are they doing?
It's a base.
And can we come visit their base on the moon?
Eventually, yes.
Eventually, yes. Well, that would be great.
They fully expect that there will be no more surprises. One of the things that has come up recently is that my wife's excursion with Tan came up with a statement that basically was very simple. She said that I was told that they won't do anything without letting us know. In other words, there has always been celestial activity, and many times key celestial activities were given some kind of information ahead of time through various means, you know, whether it be through actual communicate, maybe in writing, or such as the Ten Commandments, or some other means, like celestial events that are studied, and or as well as telepathic messages through visions and dreams, as well as outright channeling. But the most reliable, or the combination of all of these, all of these things, in concert with each other, this brings up very important messages.
Mm-hmm. When you said that they won't come here unless they tell us.
Yeah, there's sufficiently been warned, not warned, but just told
And when you say us, who is us?
Well, we as the human race here.
Oh.
Yeah.
So in other words, they're going to warn us before they come?
Yeah, they are. Yeah, I guess, and I'm one of their voices here, I guess.
Okay, well, we'll do that for sure. But I thought I'd ask you some more about the star in the east, the Sirius star. Since this is very close to the 25th of December, and, well, Jesus was born to the Virgin Mary on December 25th, and his birth was announced by a star in the east, which three kings or magi, which followed and locate and adore this new savior. So he was a teacher at the age of 12, and then at the age of 30 he was baptized by John the Baptist and thus began his ministry. He had 12 disciples, which he traveled about performing miracles such as healing the sick and walking on water and raising the dead. And he was known as the King of Kings, the Son of God, the Light of the World. But it was the star in the east, the Sirius star, I was just mentioning the Christmas cards we get, and with it shows the Star of Bethlehem and the three wise men. And, if they don't know the word spaceship, they're going to say it was a star. But the star in the east, that could have easily been a spaceship in that story.
Well, yeah, you have to remember the Magi were key in this particular revelation. They were keen observers, extremely well trained. And they were from the east, essentially, you might say, from Sumeria or from, Persia around there, in the east.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, some of the greatest star observers are from the east. They had passed down to them many of the purposefully given constellation names and alignments and things that they looked for. And they noticed some perturbations in particular movements within the stars that they observed in the constellations. And these were movements with the planets and their alignments together. And it came to a point where there were some indication that a particular planet was basically trying to point out that a king was about to be brought into the world. And, of course, there was much more than that. They had other scripts that they were working with. And they were actually looking for this much of the time. So they spent a lot of time in their studies. And then when they got this particular event in front of them, they took notice and began to really say, wow, there's something going to happen around here pretty soon. So, and then of course was this mobile star that did come up, which is, you might say the guiding star, which was probably a celestial vehicle, a UFO. But the alignments that they were observing were celestial, were actual stars and planets, and their movements, especially the wanderers, like the planets, Jupiter, and maybe, the ones that we kind of watch, we ourselves watch,
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that was fun for me was when I was little, I was given a telescope, so I ended up learning about the constellation at a very young age, spending my nights out in the front yard and with my telescope and, trying to look for constellations. And they're not, they're they're kind of hard to pick out unless you got something in front of you, but it takes a while to learn all that stuff. But these magi, I mean, they didn't have TV. I remember I'd spend an hour or two out there and I'd get tired after I go, you know, run in and, you know, grumble about the clouds or something.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't always that easy to observe. However, the magi were scholars, and their observations tended to be celestial, and from our earliest civilization, celestial observation was very important. And in fact, the key names for the various constellations are given us for some reason or another, I'm not sure. But ultimately, it keyed in with their observations. And then the very unique guiding star came in, that came in from the east. And they noticed it moved toward the west, that they followed, which they followed, armed with the knowledge that something in their celestial observation, something was about to happen in terms of a new king, or, you know, because of its sort of like being pointed out by, I believe, the planet Jupiter was just moving around there.
Well, it's really amazing that this star moved into the position and pointed to this child.
Yes, it had a actual real movement that actually pointed out the location. Because other indications were that shepherds were on invite. They had invitation to come and take a look.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are out in their fields with their flock. And had in personal invitation. So that's not hard to do with my experience. Not hard to believe that this happened because of my experience with these celestial beings, that they can actually... my invite to the New Jerusalem was, do you want to go and see how things work, or how things work, and come and see? And I said, sure, you know. So.
Oh, they asked you to just come see how things work?
Yeah, and, not really in terms of how things work, but come and see, you know. And then there was another farewell, and this is you can go and you'll now go and learn how things work around here. And that's when I replied to Tunella. We were already at the New Jerusalem, and I told her, I'm too stupid, you know, to understand. Look at, we just came here from Earth. How can I even begin to understand how things work around here? But it wasn't so much the dynamics of their technology that was shown. It was a lot more of what the purpose of us being creatures, human beings on Earth, what it's all about, you know. So this getting back to the Star of Bethlehem, mm-hmm. is a very important fact that this was planned. The alignment would come up, there will be certain signals in the skies for the observers who are well trained, and they would see. There was a emphasis being made about some of these stars in the sky. I think Regis, the King Star, and the circle of Jupiter around the King Star, pointing out, hey, a king's coming. So basically that's what happened.
Well, with all the stars...
And then they saw something kind of guiding them, and it's not hard to believe it. They considered it a star, because I thought when the ship, Tan's ship, was a star because of its beautiful light.
Exactly. It's easy to see that they would call it a star.
Right. The one that guided them over to the west, yeah.
I mean, with all the stars in the sky, can you imagine they're still talking about a star? One star, it had
one
to be.
One unusual one.
It had
and
to be unusual.
Well, they were well. They understood about the wandering planets, the planetoids, you know, planets mm-hmm. themselves, like Venus, Jupiter. They're pretty bright, and even Mars. You know, Mars is kind of reddish. I could easily pick out Mars and Jupiter and Venus. Track their movements around. They didn't. They weren't in sync with the rest of the stars. You know, you can see that.
Mm-hmm.
But observing a particular, almost event in Jupiter's movement right around, kind of sort of like, here, look, I'm pointing to you, to this star. And Jupiter did a little bit of motion around there, and which is the star of the king, you know, Regis, I think the name was.
And it sounded like the star cast a light down to the location.
Yeah, well, easy. I mean, I tell you that must have happened. As far as the guiding star, or star of Bethlehem, mm-hmm. after the celestial observations were made, the star of Bethlehem really did guide them and pointed out. It was not a planet. It was a literal ship. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Along with the ship came some of their passengers who were called the angels that invited the humans that they could find around the place to witness this event, where the creator of the universe, the creator son, we now know him as Jesus Christ, come into the world and bring a whole new dimension to our world and our consciousness. And we are now headed toward a time in which he is about to return. But along with him are just a huge fleet of stars that will be coming along. We'll look at them as stars and UFOs. It's just a tremendous wave. They won't, they won't land.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not for that purpose in which they'll come.
Now, is it true? I'm not even sure if this is true, but on the 24th of December, that the this brightest star, the star in the east, Sirius,
yes,
aligns with the three brightest stars in the Orion belt, and these bright stars are called the Three Kings. And the Three Kings and the Star of Sirius all point to the place of the sunrise on December 25th. Is that true?
I don't know, really. That's some part which is somewhat disconnected.
Yeah, I mean...
it is interesting that we do have this date, December 25th, as a significant date.
It is.
Much well, more importantly was the to get to know him, the Creator Son. And it is essentially the bridge way, you might say, between ourselves and our Father Fractor, that Christ in us. Yeah. Because if it wasn't for that, the human connection would be very difficult to me between ourselves and the Celestials. Celestials would always be looked at as some kind of god, some gods. And instead, because of this, we now know, we can now understand that this bridge has been made.
The bridge with Jesus, you mean?
Yeah, between us and the heavens. And he being essentially the ruler of the universe, yeah. And he, that bestowal had to be made. He had to bestow himself in a mortal form, an earth of all the planets that he could choose from. of he chose here, and it was well planned and orchestrated. When he chose it, they orchestrated the timetable, they orchestrated everything, and the significant star events that would be coming about, and then they it played out. They play it out, and they it's just a demonstration of how well understood the universe is by, of course, the creator of it. And they wanted to orchestrate the story very clearly.
Well, it sounded like he wanted to make his presence known when he arrived.
Yes. It's all, that's why it's very important. There were significant events in the heavens and the stars that had to be brought into play.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these were known about and would put the timetable in an event. Why the timetable had to be played out this way is because these celestial events would come into play, and then they essentially align them. The coming of creator sun into the earth as a mortal of the land of our earth, Runches people, essentially human.
And he was baptized by John the Baptist. Why?
John the Baptist is a cousin, yes.
A cousin?
Related. And, yes.
And Jesus had a ministry then.
He had much more than a ministry that just started suddenly at that point. He had a period of time he spent in India, spent some time there understanding what was preceding him. And John the Baptist was the closest predecessor, who declared basically just the turning around. Essentially, if you were trying to navigate toward the truth, and you stand anywhere, it's just almost an infinite number of directions to run. But basically, he was pointing it. His pointing was back to people's consciousness to get back to God. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So he wanted to symbolize a new birth in terms of the baptism in water, because the famous natural birth is preceded by the breaking of the water. My water broke. Now I gotta give birth. You know, that's basically the idea of the baptism is this new birth. There are many other things that people use spiritually in trying to teach the baptism, but it really points to that new birth concept and born once of flesh and blood, and then born second time of the eternal construct, the one that cannot perish, which is the immortal soul.
Are those the mortal souls that he raised from the dead?
Yes. You mean at the time of his crucifixion? There was a time then that some of the dead within the tombs came out alive. It was there were resurrections that people saw who they thought were supposed to be dead running around town.
Yeah, that'll get around town pretty fast.
That got around town pretty fast. Yeah.
So what else can you tell us about him raising the dead or walking on water? I've heard that so many times.
Well, walking on water, demonstrate a certain power over, you know, gravity. What would people say about it? There was the interesting thing that Peter was on the boat and he saw Jesus walking on water, and he was on a levitator and moving along, and he jumped in close enough to Christ to be on the levitator, and then he fell off the edge and he began to sink. Christ pulled him closer to him and said, stay with me, don't be afraid. In other words, don't let your faith or your disbelief push you away from me. So he kind of came closer, and then, you know, of course, he was on the levitator, and then they walked on water. This is technology. This is stuff that is for real, as far as technology is concerned. It is not this is a fairy tale.
Mm-hmm.
But it's more a demonstration, too, that what he wanted to demonstrate was his desire to be with his disciples, even so much to walk across the ocean to get there. That is probably one of the most beautiful pictures of him walking in water. Not so much he walked in water, but that he wanted to be with his people. Wanted to be with us. That's it.
And the water, is that the ocean?
No. It's the sea. Yeah, you might call it the sea.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, these stories have been handed down, and they're still rather strong about Jesus.
Of course. I mean, there was a lot of Jesus operated with. He held back a lot of what he could do because it wasn't the right time. In fact, he even held back some of the story that he wanted to tell them. But he said, "You can't bear it now. If I were to tell you all of which I know, you cannot understand it. You wouldn't be able to bear. It's immenseness. You know, you're people of the earth, the land right now. You touch and feel everything. Yet there is so much more. So it's not necessary for you to know, basically. Of course, we're moving into an area of time in our development on earth that is well able to understand and realize. Much of what we look back at as miracles are great technologies, you know. But what I know as not technology is probably what is most important, which was that powerful effect of their of who they are. The celestial beings are people of immensely well-developed love. The nature or the divinity that they hold is our divinity that we need to develop. If we stay earthbound, in the sense of all of our cares and all of our experience limited to that, then we find it hard to expand to the level of what the Rancho book calls Mota, that level of infinite love, the love that comes from first source. And that is the real beauty of it all. Because if they just have technology and Jesus can generate that technology to walk on water, if he wasn't motivated by his love to go see his friends and they feel that they wanted to meet him halfway at least, it's sort of like it's all useless. Just, you know, technology, you know. But because of the motive behind it, that's where the beauty is. That's what I learned. There's so much of that beauty that goes on there.
You mean the beauty in their heart?
Huh?
You mean the beauty in their heart?
In their heart and their minds also. And their demonstration of that, their Christ-likeness or their divine nature. And that's the nature that we know. We need to really try to attain. That's the goal, really. Once basically making that new birth experience, that second breaking of the water, essentially John the Baptist baptism. So.
Well, the story of Jesus just goes on forever, it seems.
Well, it is an eternal story, but his message, the story of Jesus for on earth, is limited. It is limited to his life here, and it's bringing a lot of wonder and people questioning about the historical Jesus and whether he really rose from the dead or did he continue here on earth till he died. Well, the truth of the matter is, he couldn't stay here. He could not stay here.
Mm-hmm.
So his story, as his historic story, can get confused. But if people understand what he came to bring and to do, then it all doesn't really matter as far as the historic part. Because the historic part get distorted, and it can be told according to the storyteller.
Which I'm sure just changes quite a bit with all the different storytellers.
It can, yes, it can. But he did do a lot. He lived a full life till, he was crucified. I mean, too bad that he was murdered and crucified and killed. But it was for that purpose that he came, to become a mortal with the limits. And it was because of that you might say Rancha Earth has, in this generation, is not going to see extinction, you might say. Extinction that has happened, if we look in the geologic record and look at the records from those who study, we see extinctions, at least four great extinctions happening on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And these extinctions, more or less, were around events that were pointed out by Jesus himself. He says, how will it be, when it comes? And he says, you'll hear about trouble, political trouble, wars, rumors of wars. You'll hear about spats, groups, not necessarily nations, but groups that don't get along. And this is because of what generally causes problems is economic problems. We just see a great economic problem right within ourselves, which can cause a lot of trouble. And then, of course, comes problems that are going to be seen in our earth, as far as earthquakes, as far as signs in the heavens, which are, we look at Saturn's funny, aurora, which shouldn't be happening, and our sun's presently not acting right. And, of course, we're getting a cold snap here right now, aren't we?
Yes. Woke up this morning for ice coming down the river.
Yeah. So much for global warming. But.
And Las Vegas was really cold.
Right. There's snow in the...
Wow.
Snow over there. Frozen,
A lot of broken pipes, I'm sure, in Las Vegas.
Yeah. I know on top of Haleakala, there's ice,
There's ice up there now?
Yeah, every night, probably. Things freeze up there.
Oh, with rime ice.
With what?
It's rime ice. It's the ice that forms with the wind.
Maybe, but there's always some condensation, and then it gets even colder, and then it freezes. The condensation freezes.
Yeah, it's really different to have ice on the top of, well, have ice anywhere on in Hawaii.
Yeah, well, we're supposed to take a look at these changes, and they're supposed to give us enough warning. And that's what Tan was sort of saying, you know, we'll give you guys enough warning. We don't do anything without telling you folks.
So he's saying to you that he's going to communicate with you?
With us. I mean, there's many, many voices that are going to be telling the story.
I see.
Right now we have scientists that are just looking to cash in on the global warming agenda with grants and stuff like that. So they don't want to look at the real truth. But there are others who will be pointing out the truth because they're not looking at grants. They're not looking at the money that drives global warming, you know, philosophy. They're looking at observing what's going on. And hopefully we won't be, taken with the blinders of the same kind of blinders that happened with the economic bust that has just happened. And it's only the first of the second one's coming, so that's going to be even worse. And these are all told about ahead of time. So, The economy, the way we built an economy based not on, based on a lot of stuff of uselessness, you know, a lot of useless stuff, you know, the economy was based on.
So even the banks are magicians.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that's not what we're talking about.
No, I know. I know. We'd like to focus on this star of the east. This star in the night sky and brightest star in the sky. And
the guiding star, which people call the star of Bethlehem, is truly guided them. Yeah. As far as the signals that they got, they decoded some very interesting phenomena that was in the heavens at the time, which caused them to pay attention to this event, and then to realize that there's something going on about a regal event coming about.
So will Jesus himself be coming back again when they come back, or when they come here?
They won't come without him.
Oh.
Yes, it's an event that he said he would be accomplishing. And it's something that he is. It's very important. Otherwise, I really don't see the need for the New Jerusalem. It's huge. You know, tens of thousands of, you know, extremely large UFOs, vessels, could easily just park there. And I'm talking mothership size. You know, not the shuttle stuff, you know. Mothership size. So they can easily park there. Well, why such a huge base? Unless there's a gathering and for this very special event. And of course, this gathering was foretold about how he would gather from the four corners of heaven all the celestials to the event of his coming to earth for the adoption process.
You mentioned about New Jerusalem coming here, and that was a question we received.
Oh,
This is from, I believe this is from Matt Camp in Ohio, but he says, will the mothership, the New Jerusalem, dock with the planet Earth as part of the final awakening?
The New Jerusalem will dock on the Earth, and so something that we're looking further into the much further into the future for. However, it is going to be there functioning. It won't dock at this date 2012. That's not when it's going to happen. No. There's much more that has to happen here. Essentially, a world at peace, a world at higher development, spiritual development, needs to take place. And but prior to that happening, we'll have to come to this awakening that we're not alone. We have a whole community of celestial beings that are just waiting for us to wake up and truly start making the correct steps toward becoming higher ordered beings like them and with the goals very similar to them.
Do you see us waking up and this happening?
Well, yeah. Well, there's always a wake-up call, and we're getting a wake-up call, and in some aspects, in some place, in the way we're doing things in this world, and that wake-up call is going to be a truly shaky one. I mean, it's going to really wake us up. It's a continual thing that's going to move on to another phase.
And and is there a direction in the Urantia book that is taking us in that direction?
Yes, the Urantia book points out the typical phases of development, which Urantia is not in. Urantia has fallen out of, according to the Urantia book, the typical phases of development. First of all, the Avonal Sun, or the leader of the one to break through to the planet of sentient beings of a greater universe of beings out there, has already come. He came as and it was not one in which a high order angel, Daniel, or a Lanadondexan or a Varandadexan, beings of light, and or come to take and wake up the planet. It was Jesus Christ who came as the Creator Son, and this is especially important because in the entire universe, he only becomes mortal once. And it happened here on Earth.
Well, that's a good place for it to happen.
Well, it didn't come at an unusual time. It came at a time when our consciousness wasn't quite correct. We had probably one of the rough and tumble time. Yeah. Still, it was still a pretty rough and tumble time in terms of being civilized. Civilization broke down several times. Just look at the ruins around the world. You see civilization has tried to come up and has fallen. Tried to come up again, has fallen in various areas, leaving ruins behind.
Well, I have another question about the mothership also. Hello, Curtis. Hello. I'm sorry. Hi, hello, Earth. Curtis Cooperman. I have a mothership question for Michael, December 23rd, 2008. Please, dear Michael, the navigator, Riley Martin writes of seeing a Bigfoot-type family of creatures while visiting the floating Hyborian gardens on the New Jerusalem. Michael, are the Biavians aware of Bigfoot people on Earth? And that's signed by Chaka.
Yeah. Well, the level of the Bigfoot are different than we are. So they're essentially very intelligent, but they're not, we don't look at ease, making things easier for themselves. They're actually looking at a different route in their development. Essentially are not motivated by the tricks and devices that we do. It's not important to them.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, they're, as far as celestials aware of the ones on Earth, definitely they're aware of them. As far as the ones in the gardens and the New Jerusalem, they are, of course, you know, allowing them their place there.
Are they one of the same creatures? I could call them creatures.
Yes, well, you can call them creatures. We're creatures, you know.
We're creatures.
Yeah, well, yes, they're different ones too. So, it's interesting though. They don't really want to be civilized in the way we are civilized, you know. And that's an interesting level of development. And that's very kind of special, actually. So anyway, as far as that goes, you know, yeah, that's my answer to that.
Okay.
And as far as the New Jerusalem docking at 2012 on Earth, my answer is no. I'm not going to come here.
No,
Earth is not ready for that docking.
Yeah, when they say docking, it sounds like it's going to be connected with a walkway or something.
Well, docking, coming into close proximity and literally
how could it touch the Earth?
Yeah.
It can't dock with Earth, can it?
What is that?
Could the New Jerusalem actually dock with Earth?
Yes.
And how would that mechanically happen?
It won't mechanically have to be mechanically happening.
Oh.
There's perimeters that, you know, will be zones that are laid out, you know, and it will be. I personally believe that there will be a first area which will dock, and they'll lift and move, and then they'll move to another part of the Earth and dock over there too. We'll do that, and then this is essentially our. Position in the heavens. When that happens, we are no longer, absolutely not a race of beings that are stuck on Earth or just stuck within our solar system. No.
Mm-hmm. Well, we are stuck on Earth now.
Well, we're stuck, you know, there's a lot of things that make us stuck here, but it's, again, one of the things that we are here about is, first of all, the capacity of becoming eternal souls, you know, our soul construct. If we waste a lot of time here on Earth, and we've only been given a short time. There's this famous saying, you know, life is too short.
Yes.
How many of us haven't heard that statement?
Yes, we've heard
that. I think everybody has heard the concept that life is too short. So what do you go about doing? Well, many people have made mistakes in that philosophy that life is too short and go about trying to attain things. Or it's not that the things are wrong. It's that the approach to this short life is giving us the ability to have an eternal vehicle called the soul, which can transcend the dimension of mortality to the level in which we can ascend along with the Creator's Son, who descended all the way to mortality. And then in his ascent back to the throne, back to eternity, take along as many as will come along with him, following that pathway, which is laid out. It's actually laid out pretty clearly.
Mm-hmm.
So, given only the situation on Earth, yeah, we're right now in a position where we should try not to waste too much time here in selfish attainment, but learn about true development of the divine nature, which is a relationship with each other here on Earth in a correct stance. But in overcoming the shortcomings of the mortal being, we require the actual connection back to first source. And that's where having that extra help with the Father Fractal, the thought adjuster with us, who actually gives us great advantage over being an animal creature.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and as a result, we can become beings that are perfected, you know, walking before God and being perfect, finished, essentially now functioning in a sort of triune way with God himself. And then as a result, being adoptable into the rest of the universal sentient, God-seeking, God-knowing beings. Many kinds, you know, I mean, there as far as material beings, there's like, wow, you know, different kinds. They're amazing, you know, they're different kinds. Scary, some of them. Some of them funny.
Yeah, and you didn't really get to see them all.
No, I didn't get. Of course not. The basic schooling was get there, meet them, understand them, and then maybe not really just to realize that there's this much more than ourselves. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, there certainly is more than ourselves. Just look at the photographs the Hubble telescope has taken. Deep into space.
And that's just
gorgeous.
Just what we can see. But being with these other beings that are high order already, and essentially they are citizens of heaven. They are numerous, so many.
You know, recently I thought of something that when you went out to Saturn, How long did it take you to, once you got aboard their ship and you went past the moon, how long did it take to get to Saturn?
Oh, it was very short. But like I said before,
very short
excursion out, you know, into, let's say, you know, 100 miles off of Earth or something like that,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then you know, moving past the moon, that was the long trip, and then that was where the time was the longest, you know, and the observing point, the point where I observe Earth, observed the Moon, and then when things went blank, it was almost instantaneous between that time when things went blank to the next vision, which was Saturn, and then them pointing out the destination, which is the New Jerusalem, the light bulb.
Well, I
call it the light bulb, yeah.
Yes, I recently posted on the homepage that Saturn is 1.18 light years. Wait, did I say that right? Oh gosh, how am I? Oh, that it would take at the speed of light, it would take 1.18 hours to get to Saturn.
Right.
So if you got out there in a matter of minutes, you were traveling much faster than the speed of light.
Yeah, we weren't. Actually, we weren't traveling in terms of in what would be considered from A to B. No. Yeah, from A to B, traversing distance. No. The term they used for me, they didn't want to spend a lot of time with me and just gave me simple things to perceive it as we go around. In other words, they didn't consider a straight line, just go around it. Straight line takes too long, go around it.
Well, for a radio transmission to be sent to Saturn or to the Cassini,
yeah,
it's, an hour and 10 or 12 minutes for it to get there.
Yeah, the propagation of.
If you got there much faster, you were traveling much faster than the speed of light.
Yeah, traveling faster than the speed of light, yes.
Much faster.
I would say so. Time dilation. I think it was dimensional because it had to do with dimensional shift. So going around it dimensionally, going around this basic three-dimensional time, four-dimensional, including time, space and time. It went around that.
The Cassini spacecraft, it took 7 years to get there.
Yeah. As long as you stay within the grasp of space and time, you're locked into that, but you go around those. You go around the laws of space and time.
Well, maybe in their spacecraft, but not in...
Not in
NASA's.
Yeah, exactly. As long as we're locked into that. And like I said, I never felt like, another thing, I never felt like, where is the weightlessness? I think I asked that question. Where is the weightlessness?
And then your feeling of no movement, like you thought, oh, this is just a movie.
Yes, no movement, no... getting thrown back into your chair with acceleration, you know, no, none of that.
None of that.
None of that.
No. Well, we've just about come to the end of the hour, which was another fast hour. I can't believe it. And a couple days we'll be here, December 25th, that special Christmas day.
Yes, and
the day of Jesus.
Right. And going back to that, just a quick thing is that where did all that knowledge of celestial observation come from? And of course, those magi were from the east, and you know, that's Sumeria and stuff, you know, Persia, or you know, the one of the more ancient of all star civilization.
Well, it's a story that wraps around our planet.
Right.
And it's good people can listen to you and from all these different countries because of the internet. Well,
that's probably one of the reasons that my memories were released at this time. Not that my education with them stopped. My education with them was, they told me that it would continue on Earth. They would direct me and guide me to what I needed to know. And one of the first places I ended up learning about was Nikola Tesla, Tesla coils, playing around with holograms, laser beams, and all that good stuff, as well as many other things, as well as becoming an ordained minister of the Gospel of Jesus Christ. And the Gospel of Jesus Christ is the message that was before the earth was even dreamed up. It's an old, ancient purpose of creating eternal, sentient beings from the ground up, not from the heaven down. Yeah.
Well, that's how they took you to Saturn.
Yeah.
And time to say aloha, and we'll get back with you before the end of the year. And have a Merry Christmas.
Yes, have a Merry Christmas, and aloha.
Aloha, Michael. Bye.
Bye.